Hello and welcome to Business Without Bullshit, where we take a sideways look at modern business, talking to founders and entrepreneurs about the problems they face and how they solve them. I'm Julia Ori, and alongside me is my co-host, new in today, Simon Walsh.
Hi, Juliet.
Hi, Simon. And a quick reminder, if you like what we do here, please rate and review us on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you listen to your podcast. And remember to follow us on Instagram, Twitter, and LinkedIn at Biz, B-I-Z, without B-S. Now, with that being said, our guest this week is Tanya Colding Stentz, Director of Strategy and Development at the European Sperm Bank, one of the leading sperm banks in the world. Established in 2004 with lots of entrepreneurial spirit and a strong focus on daily activities, the European Sperm Bank was bought by Axel, a private equity firm, in 2009 to facilitate further growth and now employs 130 people across 8 locations in 4 countries. Tanya is a self-confessed innovative business developer with a strong mind for efficiency who likes to take a holistic approach in business. In other words, she's a person who makes sure the whole job gets done and gets done properly. We're in good company indeed. Tanya, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you very much, Juliet.
And welcome to London after an absence of almost 2 years.
Yes,
must
sadly.
Must be nice to be back.
Very much so. Yep. Thanks for having me.
So, Tanya, what is keeping you busy at the moment?
Well, a lot of things. Excel, as you just mentioned, is keeping me busy focusing on sustainability. So that takes up a great part of my time. And then I think during the last years, really, we've managed to tighten up our business quite a lot. So we are ready to sort of engage in new adventures as well. So we are curious to learn what's out there for us to look into, both product and market wise. So that's taking up a lot of my time doing all the research on the options.
So, Tanya, one thing I do really want to know, when I go out socially, I rarely tell people what my job is because people typically like to ignore me or not speak to me. I feel that you're in a similar field. Do you go out socially and tell people what you do?
That is a good question. Yes, I do like to talk about what I do because I think it's so very, very important. I must admit that sometimes I can't be bothered and I'll just say that I work in a bank because then people don't ask any more questions. but most often I just find it important to have that chat because it's an industry with so many myths to it. And I find it important that we do all we can to demystify and normalize sperm donation. And people always are very curious and also very open-minded. And it's part of our strategy to make the world a more open-minded society. So that's basically our mission, to bring healthy children into an open-minded society. And I think that really you'll see that in our corporate DNA, that people like to talk about what we do and to explain and to inform people around us. So we make sure that these babies that come out of what we do will grow up in a society where they are understood and welcome. So that's part of the job, I think.
So, Tanya, what I am fascinated by is how and what was your first job that has ultimately led you to now where you are?
There is no connection between the two at all. My first job was in the food industry, so a very different ballgame. I took a master degree at Copenhagen Business School, CBS, and rather randomly ran into a recruiter. Yes, that makes sense. Yeah. at a Christmas party, as you do. And he hooked me up with Klaus Meyer, who's a Danish chef. He's kind of similar, I guess, the equivalent to someone like Jamie Oliver, very entrepreneurial, initiating lots of amazing gastronomic projects. And him and his business developer at the time, they had a great idea. Because in Denmark, the lunch culture is slightly different than here. So we have lunch brought into our offices as a little buffet by catering companies.
I hope you're listening to this, Juliet.
It's what they do in the States, in the West Coast.
France as well.
It's a lovely idea because you basically sit everybody down at the same time and have lunch together, and you have nice food, fresh brought in, a nice buffet every day with a warm meal and salads and cold cuts and whatever. So that's quite the standard in Denmark. So you'll have big companies who obviously have their own canteens.
I'm looking at you and laughing only because my family are obsessed with food and booze, and I think the only reason why we can't possibly have something like that is we would turn it into an all-day, every-day, eat as much as you can, like, and none of us need encouragement.
Yeah, that might happen for a few months, then it might that might slow down. I think it's a nice way of socializing. I think it's important to have that proper break during the day where you sit and enjoy a good meal. And so it's basically, I think many of the caterers who do this at the moment think more of creating a good break for people than just feeding them. So you need to create a good atmosphere around the food. The idea was to establish a company that would provide this food. And obviously there were lots of caterers doing this already. But if you've had food from the same caterer on a daily basis for a couple of months, you get a bit
bored.
Mm. Exactly. By the cutlery and the plates and the food and everything just kind of looks the same. Even though the menu will change all the time, it's still the same type of flavors. And
it's why I can't leave London, the fact that I can have a different meal every day. I'm really struggling.
That is a luxury here. I love it. But so the idea here was that we would gather a lot of these caterers, and then the receiving company could then choose, so this week I want this caterer, and then I want that caterer for the next month, and so on. So they could swap all the time, and we would do all the
really
all the service.
Thinking. I mean, now that's good. Very common.
Yep.
That wasn't common at the time.
No, not at all. That was very, very disruptive in the market at the time. So we basically built around that idea. So it was about getting all the best caterers in town and approaching all the companies and making them understand this concept, because they would then the companies would then be dealing with us.
And I can imagine them being a bit funny or territorial. They don't want to give up that company or that, or no?
So the kitchens were delighted to not have to do all the admin, because they enjoy cooking. They don't want to have an angry customer on the phone saying, you forgot my bread, or tomorrow we'll be 12 rather than 20. So they don't want to do all that admin necessarily. So they were quite happy for us to do that part. We'd also do all the logistics, and we'd talk to all the clients and discuss their needs and understand that they don't like lamb and all of that we would do. And it turned out to be a rather good idea. So it's now basically the market standard for lunch catering in Denmark. So
and it's still going.
It is still going.
Brilliant.
Yep. And then I left a few years down the line. I still co-own it, but it's left in the safe hands of others now.
And so how do you go from food to sperm?
Yes, that's no obvious move, is it?
There's not even a line to connect the two of them.
There's no good reason, really. It was a complete coincidence. After doing the food business for a while, I did business development for a consultancy. And then after some years, I thought it was time to move on. And I was just... It was the first time I looked online for a job, and I came across this position. And at the time, our name was Nordic Cryobank. And that didn't say sperm bank to me at all. So I the headline didn't mean anything to me. And I read the whole description of the job, and it sounded really interesting. And then only in the footer, it said Nordic Cryobank is one of the leading sperm banks in the world. I thought, oh. And I had a little giggle, and I thought, well, but...
I think we all do.
Exactly. That's perfectly okay.
Certain topics you're not supposed to discuss. Religion, politics, weather, and sex.
Sperm banks,
And sperm, yeah. I had a smile and a giggle, and then I thought, but... Like, it wouldn't influence my thoughts of the position at all.
But you're obviously incredibly liberal.
Yes, I guess. But I think... Probably not more than your average Dane. It is a very liberal country, and we, compared to here, we are much more relaxed about sex in general, nudity. It is very different in Denmark. So it didn't really strike me as something sort of not normal at the time when I read the job ad. So, oh well, why not? Let's work in a sperm bank.
So, Tanya, what's been your biggest failure thus far? I know that's a very negative thing to ask, but I feel that you've been incredibly successful. I mean, you started an incredible innovative business. You are now at the forefront in a business that is in, I would say, a sweet spot. Has everything always gone right?
I'd probably lie, wouldn't I? No, I think we all make mistakes quite frequently, even.
All the time.
But yeah,
we're human.
All the time, yeah. and of course, so do I. One thing I will just always look back at with regret was the lunch business that we established in Copenhagen. It went so well, and we thought somebody else will have to try our food. Obviously not our food, it was the caterer's food, but we should go somewhere else with this concept. So I did market research in various European cities and presented all my findings to the board, and we agreed at the time to go to Oslo to open. This was 2008, early 2008. And I started setting up, and a few months later, the financial crisis hit. And basically what we wanted to introduce is an employee perk, isn't it? Like we want companies to invest more money in their employees. And that was not going down very well in 2008, even in Norway, where you'd think they'd they were still well off, but they were scared just like the rest of us. So eventually we had to close that business down because we weren't getting anywhere. Everything had just gone into full stop at that time. So we withdrew, and obviously I hated starting something that wasn't a success. so that was a bit painful, but also it made me realize a few things that I've taken with me since. One thing is about culture, and I've used that actively when launching new countries since, but respecting the cultural differences, even between Denmark and Norway, which are supposed to be very, very similar, there are big differences.
I think the Danes are more open, aren't they?
I'd say, yeah, more liberal in many things. But I think we're both very sort of happy and relaxed nations.
Do you say no? We believe in the UK, Brits can't say no. Yeah, we say things are interesting. We say, "Oh, that's really interesting." I mean, that is our word for no. We just cannot tell you no.
That's quite obvious when you come here as a Dane. After a few months, you will think, "Hang on,
really? Am I that interesting?"
These people are not getting back to me, even though they said it was interesting.
So I have to educate people on sales because people arrive here and are like, "Oh my god, I've had these amazing meetings," and everyone says they're
really interested.
And I'm, what did they say to you? They're really interested. I'm like, no, that's really not a good sign. That means no. They're like, but they said they were interested. I'm like, no. That's the British way. Really nice to meet you. Keep in touch. No, that's just not a good sign. If you go for drinks, if you're invited for a cup of tea, then
but also I think I've been invited for a lot of teas and dinners, but it sounds a bit like a politeness thing to invite people out, but it doesn't actually necessarily happen, whereas it would happen. If a Dane asks you out for a drink, it will happen.
So, Tanya, what do you think is most misunderstood about being an employer, being in business?
Lots of things, but more recently, that's probably due to my own focus on all our sustainability efforts at the moment as well. Like the whole idea that's been prevalent, I guess, for many, many years, that a business is there to do its own bit and to optimize its own earnings. And it just seems a bit wrong. Like how can that work out in the long run? Whereas if you would take a more sustainable and responsible approach and think that, okay, what we're going to do by sustainable, I also mean that you have to earn a profit because otherwise your business is not sustainable, obviously. But how can we be a responsible part of a society and benefit to the greater good? So I think that whole sort of conception of how to run a business with such a sort of narrow focus
on... All businesses should have a purpose and a greater purpose.
I'm afraid that's not always possible, but then at least for the business to have a purpose as such. I mean, if you're selling shoes, you're selling shoes, and obviously the shoe can be more or
but
less
you
good.
Feel it should be a sustainable shoe.
Exactly. Like, why not consider how that shoe and your supply chain or whatever can influence society and do some greater good.
I feel things are happening that way.
Absolutely.
I think we've come quite a long way.
Yes.
And I think in the developed world, we're pretty good at looking at that.
I think there's, I don't disagree with you. I think we've come a long way, but I still think there's a lot of lip service given to sustainability. I think if you really sort of delve down at what's happening within a business, you know, people talk about sustainability, but what are they really doing about it? So I think what I think we need to see is more action in that respect. So,
well, we're trying to run a lot of initiatives. So obviously, selling sperm as such, well, you help people have children, which is of course hopefully a very good thing to do for both the families and society. But we try to also to take a broader perspective on it. So one thing we're doing is that we're currently launching. This has been a pet project of mine since I started. I've been wanting to do this for years, but we're currently launching a big analysis project. So we will every year now send out a questionnaire to our clients and asking them. So basically, it's about discovering the welfare of the child. So how is the life of a donor child? So we'll send out this questionnaire every year.
Do you get a good response rate back?
It's just, we're just pressing the send button now. I would expect it to be a lot better than a regular questionnaire because this is about your child and your child's well-being. So
I think there's a huge market in terms of they will respond.
I'd hope so.
And they're unrepresented. But I have a lot of single mothers. So who have gone and got, and they've all formed a large group and share information and data. And
they do that because there's nowhere else to get that data. So what we're doing with this study is basically that if we become sort of the best in the world to have this data and based on so many recipients, then we will have actual knowledge, so we can guide these families on what is best practice and what happens if you do this and what happens when that and so on. So we're really trying to, obviously this will take years to build, but we want to be the absolute experts in our field and have actual knowledge rather than just anecdotes, because there are plenty of anecdotes, and the research that are done by the university professors and so on is, of course, it's always very good, but it's based on very few people, so it's qualitative rather than quantitative. So we really want to do this big, broad study. So we're trying to do lots of these extra things that we are not really obliged to do, but it just feels like the right approach.
So what do you find most uncomfortable about being in business?
So we believe that being a leader is lonely. When you start a business, like I started here, I always laugh. In fact, I was laughing with another lady the other day. I remember us opening the law firm, opening our doors and ready for the clients to walk in, and nobody walked
good
in.
God,
I was like...
Shocking, yeah.
I mean, I can't believe I even thought people would just walk in, you know? Like, and it's the belief that, you know, as a business owner, I mean, the honesty is that you generally earn less than everybody else. You struggle with cash flow, you struggle with all different things, and this belief that it's really easy as a business owner. So we like to ask the question because people think, oh, running a business or, you know, doing things, oh, how easy, you know?
Yeah, well, maybe not easy, but very rewarding and very entertaining, I think. So I think that was why I thought that uncomfortable was such an, like, I just never thought of it.
Do you come from a family of self-employed?
No, they're not self-employed, but my dad was basically doing the same as I'm doing. So I
was he? What did he do?
Well, he's been CEO of various companies during my upbringing and childhood. So I often went with him to work, and I always thought that was when I was, I don't know, six, somebody asked me what I wanted to do when I grew up, and I said, I'm going to be the CEO like daddy. And they said, oh, why? Because then I can sit with my feet up on the desk all day.
He did.
He was probably working at the same time, but he's very chill to my dad. So he'd kind of sit there in his big chair and put his feet up and go, meow, sit there and read and chat on the phone and have a meeting. Like he's very relaxed. So I think I grew up to see business as a sport, really, like a hobby. It's a game you play, and you've got all like a board of chess. I don't play chess, but like having you have all your little.
I think
pieces.
It is a game of chess. Yeah. I think chess is quite a good comparison in that you've got to study and you got to think about it, and
I think it's just it's challenging and. But fun, like I'd enter a board game for the fun of it. And I'm also in business for the fun of it.
I think it's very important. I
well,
think
you've
we
got
have
to have fun,
enjoy.
Yes. I mean, we all spend so much time at work that if we didn't enjoy it, well, if you don't enjoy it, then exactly. You know, you should really go off and do something else. So.
Exactly. But to be honest, I too often come across people who don't feel that they go to work because they have to make a living and they don't particularly enjoy what they're doing. And that makes me think that what a privilege it is to feel that way. And I've been fortunate that that's been all my life, and I hope and expect that to continue, and I will make sure that will continue.
And now, a quick word from our sponsor.
Ulrie Clark got its start back in 1935, and while the world has changed a bit, it's more than just survived. From complying with the FCA and all things financy, they can also speak fluently in the language of legalese. Ulrie Clark was born and raised right here in the UK, and now for 20 years they've been helping others get set up and on their way. Ulrie Clark stores always open and happy to provide straight talking financial and legal advice since 1935.
Big shout out to Sean Veer Singh for a stellar jingle. You can find him at Sean Veer Singh Music on Instagram. And at this point, let me quickly remind you to give us a nice review, please, on Apple Podcast or follow us on Spotify so you'll never miss an episode. Now back to the chat. So, Tanya, what's the one thing about this world you'd like to change in the future?
And I can only do one. That's a big.
You can do more, but I
two.
Yeah, I can do two.
Very
yeah.
Generous here.
Well, obviously, at the time, it's obvious to wish to end all the wars, isn't it? But then, to me, I think wars would go away if we could just start treating each other as equals. If we could just accept that we are different but equal, I think the world would just be a much better place. And I think we are getting there, at least in Denmark and the UK and Australia, but there's just a long way until until the full world is there. So I'm afraid it's going to be many years from now, but I guess what we can do is to lead by example and make sure that we get there sooner than later.
I love that. I'm going to be campaigning. I feel our logo should be equal but different.
Yes. Wouldn't that be nice?
Rather than equality.
Yes.
Yeah, I prefer the equal but different.
Yeah, because it acknowledges that there's differences.
We are right? Exactly yeah. Different.
I love the differences between gender and races and political standpoints or whatever. That's what makes the world interesting. But we're equal at the same time. Yeah.
And Tanya, what's the best bit of advice you've ever been given?
Luckily, I've been blessed with many, many amazingly smart people in my life. And I think you just pick up little things wherever you go and who you meet, and you're inspired by wise words. But I think I'll have to say a little thank to my parents, because I think it comes from childhood, like the way you perceive the world and the people in the world. So that's a very basic thing you learn from childhood. I'm trying the best I can to teach my kids the same. But when I was growing up, I think I'll have to mention my dad on that one, because he's as I mentioned, he was the CEO with the feet up.
With his feet on his
as well. But when I was still in school, I was doing a group project, and I came home from school and I was super frustrated with one of my peers. She was just not participating and she was getting everything wrong. It was basically what my dad said. Like, he listened to my frustration and he said, you know what, you have to realize and accept that people are not equally smart. That's just not how the world works. And so if you sort of imagine that you're scoring people on a 1 to 10 scale, And
you were also one of these really sporty people, weren't you?
Yes.
Sporty.
Yes. I played squash.
You were everything I wanted to be.
I think we need a game of squash.
Oh, my God!
We can take out
I'd
all
the
class.
I'd have a cardiac arrest.
You can have a drink afterwards. You'll be fine. Yeah. So he basically taught me to look at people and give them a little scoring and just in your head. And if you find that people are, if someone is a fiver and you can then help them to act as a seven or to become a seven, then you've done a great job. Then that person will have benefited and you will have benefited. So you just have to meet people where they are and then try to coach them to be a little bit better.
I thought that
makes sense. And I think I was 13 at the time or so. I wasn't very old, but it made complete sense to me. So it kind of it got me through that project because the next day in school, I thought, okay, well, you're a three, aren't you? Can we get you to a five? So I did my best. So that was my first sort of memory of managing and trying to coach and guide others. And it was quite rewarding because she was so happy afterwards. And so was I, because our project turned out better. So
it's an amazing piece of advice. I'm glad it wasn't you and I at school, I have to say. You would have been giving me a one. I'd be having cigarettes behind me wherever. Well, maybe I'd be somewhere else though. So, Tanya, what are your top three reads or top podcasts? Do you listen? Do you read?
Currently, I'm listening to a book called, I hope I get this title right. I think it's called "I'm Afraid Debbie from Marketing Has Left for the Day." It's a very, very straightforward title. In Danish, "Jytte fra Marketing er gået for i dag," and it's a Danish author, and it's a phenomenal book on behavioral design. It's a must read for everyone because he's very humorous about it, and he's giving so many amazing examples on how human beings are completely irrational. So when you organize your business, if you want to make a change in your business, you need to understand sort of all the barriers and all the motivations. And
we all hate change. We're no good with
exactly,
change.
Exactly. So how do you make sure it happens? Because as a manager, you will want that change. So how do you then go about it? But basically the same applies to stopping eating chocolate. Like that's also
just read this book. Yeah, exactly.
It's an excellent read or listen.
So Tanya, tell us something about you that we don't know.
Oh, so that would be,
you're sporty.
For a work. Yeah, exactly. I thought it should be something outside work. I do enjoy sports and I enjoy singing. But sports, I've played squash.
Are you a secret singer?
I'm a secret singer, yes.
Are you? What kind of singing?
All types, really. I just enjoy singing. But I sang in a large gospel choir for quite a long time, just because it's just
you
an amazing
it really
energy.
Uplifting.
That as well. Yeah. No. Exactly. I would sing in that particular choir every Monday evening, from 7 to 10. And then I'd get
That's
on
a
my,
long time to
yes,
sing.
Yep. And then I'd get on my bike afterwards and bike home. And all people would have thought I was crazy because biking home through Copenhagen, I would be singing loudly on my bike. But exactly, it's so cheerful and so uplifting. So I was never ready to end it at 10 when everybody went home.
So we have a karaoke room next door.
Oh, do you?
Yeah.
Lovely.
We know that we need to invite you. We need to hear this, Tanya. Could you sing a few lines?
At the karaoke bar, absolutely. Yeah.
Okay.
We'll have a shared Friday bar since we're around the corner anyway.
Perfect, yeah. Perfect. We now know who to invite.
Absolutely.
See, Tanya, the only thing that I wasn't allowed to be part of at school was the choir.
Oh.
I was the only member of the school not to be allowed.
Schools will allow anyone who's prepared to sing to sing. So that says a lot to
you. I was bad.
I do believe that anybody can be taught to sing, but not necessarily taught to sing very well. So there might be hope.
No, Tanya, they tried that.
They gave up.
And after much perseverance, they did declare I was tone deaf. Okay, so this is where we like to hand the reins over to you, Tanya, to share your biggest bugbear, ask your most burning business question, or even a topic of your choice to talk about. The choice is yours.
Well, and of course, I have lots of questions as a foreigner in the country. It's always exciting to discuss culture, but a cultural perspective that affects my business is, of course, the difference in sort of the willingness or the willingness is probably the right word to discuss sperm donation. We do get lots of applicants, and we're very happy with our local business here, but we also see that we need more. And it's a constant, it's like this in all country, but you really have to push hard. We're one of the few companies that I know we have to fight hard, both to get our supply chain working, our deliveries, but also to sell in the other end. So we do double marketing, really. And it's always the question, how do we motivate all these lovely young men out there to become sperm donors? And I remember when I was just starting here in 18, I had lots of meetings with recruiters and office agencies and what have we. And I immediately noticed the difference. Every time I said, I would have lots of meetings with men. And whenever I said sperm, they would go...
So at this point, Tanya she's forgotten that we're on audio.
Yeah, exactly.
She's looked down to the ground. Best of British. I mean, you just said fuck to them.
Yeah.
I mean, although actually, if you'd said fuck, they would have been okay about it.
Yeah, sperm is embarrassing.
Oh, penis too.
Yeah, I can imagine. Yeah. Vagina.
Vagina. Yes. All these words we can't possibly say at the dinner table.
Yeah, and I do. That is the risk of inviting somebody from a sperm bank. They will say sperm repeatedly because...
It's in the title of the business.
It is what we do. So I immediately noticed the difference that these men were shy to meet. Maybe it was also because I was a woman. I don't know if that mattered, but they were definitely shy to sit in a room with somebody.
British men wouldn't even discuss it with each other.
But also too, there's, you know, I'm a man of a certain age, but there is that image of when you talk about sperm donation, you talk about kind of, okay, there's a cup, there's some pornography, go and do your business behind.
That's not even pornography.
Exactly,
anymore,
but go and do your business behind that screen. So I think that's probably where it comes from. There is a stereotypical view of most males of a certain generation, probably too old to donate now, but that's what sperm donating kind of conjures up. So it's kind of a slight embarrassment and discomfort.
Actually, you're right. It's still pornography, but now we actually offer them VR glasses. It's very high tech.
Hang on. Yes. So that should be the market. There's your answer.
Hold the line. I mean, this is way more. So they're not offering that in the clinics. So the European Sperm Bank, if you go and donate, you get VR. You get live porn.
I don't think it's live. But it's very realistic. Yeah. Cool. So each donor room has a screen, just a regular screen, where you can tap into different. Sort of online porn channels. I think most of them, we've never asked, but I'd assume these days that most people will use their phones for whatever they want to see. But we also offer them when they get when they check in at the reception and get the cup, we also offer them to have VR glasses, which is very popular as well.
I feel that's incredibly advanced. I know my mate that works in one of them, actually she refuses to provide paper porn and they've stopped porn.
Do they still print paper porn? They must do.
Yes, they do still print, but it's very hard to get hold of. My husband calls it hedge porn because it's what he was brought up with, which was, you know, the truckers would throw out their magazines and it was found in the country lane hedges, right? So hedge porn. I feel it was a lot cleaner than anyway, that she doesn't like having pornography in any of the rooms. I mean, this is a slight side commentary, but because people spend too long in there.
Yes, but that's good for the sperm.
Oh, is it?
Yes.
The longer the better.
Not the longer the better, and I cannot remember the exact figures now, so you'll have to excuse me if I get it wrong, but I think it's between 15 and 30 minutes will give you the best amount of sperm cells.
So being quick, no good.
Well, it gets the job done, but it's good because we only accept the good donors. But
I mean, you'll cite it anyway.
Okay. Yeah, we can actually see
more sperm if it's longer.
Yeah, but also if it's more than 30, I think that the cap was 30. If it's more than 30, then it goes downhill again. So, but there is sort of a
window.
Yeah, of I believe best shot, 15 to 30.
Gents, listen to that.
Okay, so that brings us to our favourite part of the show. Tanya, there's much statistics on this. Many listeners purely tune in to this part. This is the Business versus Bullshit quickfire round. D, cue the music. So this is where we reel off a list of key terms and all you have to do is tell us whether you think it's business or bullshit. So Tanya, are you ready?
Ready.
Perfect. Number one, diversity quotas. Is that business or bullshit, Tanya?
Diversity quotas. Well, gender quotas is a big thing in Denmark, at least at the moment. And I am very much against it.
So you say bullshit. Oh.
Yeah, bullshit.
Bullshit.
Yeah. I totally appreciate...
We can be friends now, Tanya. Yeah.
Okay, so question number two is stand-up meetings, business or bullshit?
Oh, I like stand-up meetings. I like going for a little walk. Business. Yeah.
Business.
Yeah.
Coffee.
I don't do coffee. Only if it's got a whiskey in it.
Really? Oh, Tanya, it's all coming out now.
Agendas.
Business. They make sense.
Hour-long meetings.
Bullshit.
Office dogs.
Office dogs.
So this is a very contentious.
Yeah. Well, I'd say, do you mean everyday dog in the office?
Yes.
Yeah. No, I'd probably go for bullshit.
Well done, Tanya. We remain firm friends. I am in the lead.
Oh, I'm not asking any more questions now.
Carbon credits.
Ooh, very good one. I'm torn. I'll have to say business because we need to do stuff. Yeah, but...
No, I don't disagree.
We need to push it a bit.
Swearing
in meetings. Oh.
Bullshit.
Pub lunches.
What you've just taught me, I'll have to say business.
Well done, Tanya. I think your donors will increase. I think you've got to go in for some pub lunches.
Absolutely.
Get in those pubs, have some lunches, and round up some donors.
Yeah.
It's now Thursday afternoons, not Friday afternoons.
All right.
Non-disclosure agreements.
They'll have to be good business, but they are a bit annoying.
They're bullshit.
Use them carefully.
And that's two lawyers answering. Yeah. There you go.
I noticed that. That's it.
Unlimited vacations. So in the States... Do you not have that? No, you haven't got that concept. Although you're allowed a lot of leave in Denmark. I did learn that recently.
Yeah.
Unlimited vacations is a concept come from the States. Has hit the UK because a lot of American companies like to bring their culture here to the UK. We try and embrace this, which is unlimited leave. You can have as much leave as you like. Do you think that's a good? Do you think that?
No, that's not going to help. That's not going to work. Bullshit.
Ah.
LinkedIn.
Business.
Formal work clothes.
Formal workloads.
Clothes.
Oh, bullshit.
Sperm donation.
Obviously business.
Excellent. That's the end of our quick fire round. Okay, so this is where you give 30 seconds to pitch your company, podcast, book, whatever you like. Off you go.
And that will, of course, have to be about sperm donation and the importance of donating your sperm. It's just the biggest thing in life to a lot of people to have a child. And it's devastating for those who can't, if they want to. And this is a scary statistic, but a Danish study revealed that the suicide rate amongst women who couldn't conceive but wanted to is 50%, not 15, but 50% higher than for other women. And I remember reading that going, oh, that's, you can feel that pain, can't you? And so for people for donors to understand the importance of what they could potentially do is just really big, I think, very important. So it will always be about encouraging the young men to give that gift, because it is really the ultimate gift you can give to anybody, that is the gift of life.
Fantastic. So come on, boys, come along. So great stuff, Tania. If our listeners want to find out more about you online or about the European Sperm Bank, what's the best way for them to do that?
Well, europeanspermbank.com will tell them a lot about what we do, both about being a donor, but also about finding a donor. And I guess I'm easiest to find on LinkedIn.
So there we have it. That was this week's episode of Business Without Bullshit. Thank you, Tania, for joining us. Thank you to my co-host, dear Simon.
Thank you, Juliet. Thank you, Tania.
A big thank you to you, dear listeners, and we'll be back with another episode next week. In the meantime, please rate and review us on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you listen to your podcast. And remember to follow us on Instagram, Twitter, and LinkedIn at Biz Without BS. Until next time, it's cheerio.